I remember one time when she was, you know, it was starting to be toward the end, and she did like to sew, and she must have been thinking, going back, thinking about her heritage and stuff like that. And it was so odd because she made me a necklace, a beaded necklace, Indian necklace. And I thought that was so odd. Why did she ever do it? Because she never made any kind of jewelry like that. And I still have it. But see, now I understand why. Because she was thinking of her heritage and her culture. But there's all things that she did for me, and I didn't know it then. But now that I grew up and I'm old and everything, oh, now I know why my mom did this, and I never understood.
This is Yaj Monen, and I'm Kyla Kathnedu. We're a podcast out of the Pokagon tribe in southwest Michigan and northern Indiana, and we're telling stories of our people reconnecting with culture, reviving traditions, and reclaiming their heritage. Yaj Monen means story in our language. So here's another. Lorraine Gideon is one of many elders of our tribe whose mother or father did not grow up in the care of their parents. At a young age, the federal government took Lorraine's mom from her home, cut her hair, gave her European clothing, and schooled her at the Mount Pleasant Indian Industrial Boarding School in Mount Pleasant, Michigan. Her childhood was no different from most Native Americans her age in the late 1800s through the early 1900s. To eliminate Native American culture from the states and assimilate a generation of Native children to Western ways, the U.S. government established off-reservation boarding schools, forbidding cultural practices and speaking in their native languages.
Practically all of my mother's brothers and sisters went there. They went there at a very young age, and they go through the winter, and then they would come home during the summer and then go back.
How many of them were there?
There was six girls and one boy.
Wow.
Yeah.
The boarding school at Mount Pleasant closed in 1934. The state of Michigan used it as a sort of mental hospital school until 2008. Then, in 2012, the state handed the title for most of the campus to the Saginaw Chippewa tribe. Lorraine visited the former school for the first time just a few years later.
What was it like the first time you went there to the boarding school?
The first time I went there, we went on the tour, you know, and back through there. And I started thinking about my mother and my aunts and everything. And I thought, here's where they went to school. I always wondered about it, what it looked like and what it was like and everything. And even though they're not there, it seems like it makes you feel good to know that you're there, you know, where they once were.
Mm-hmm. Was it pretty emotional being there, or was it kind of surreal? What was going through your head being able to actually see this place?
It was kind of emotional. Yeah.
Happy feelings or bad feelings?
Kind of happy. Because they never said anything bad about it, other than, you know, they couldn't speak their language, and if you did, you'd be punished.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I would want to ask my mother things about that school, and she wouldn't say anything, but I knew she just would rather not talk about it, so.
Why didn't she want to talk about it?
I don't know. Because when they were there, they weren't supposed to talk about different things. When they got there, she often told me that they weren't allowed to, like, practice their culture, and they couldn't speak their language. So at night, when they got in bed and all the lights were off, they would talk to each other in Indian. They were all right, but I mean, I have heard other things about that school.
Mm-hmm. What are some of those?
Well, I heard some negative things. I just really don't want to say.
It was a working school, and on 320 acres, there were many structures like barns and things like that where students worked. So they only spent a very small time in the classroom, and they spent most of their time doing work every day.
Farm behind here that is no longer there. So they were able to be farmhands, because in the summer when they weren't in school, they would actually farm them out to the farms and to the people within the community, and they would get paid for it because the school was supposed to be self-sustaining. Our young women during the boarding school, they were asked to be servants, you know, and spread them out throughout the town, but they also were taught how to sew clothes. And feed everyone, and then of course do the linen. Back in the day, they used to punish the young men. Sometimes they would put them in a pit out behind this building, so there is an old pit or remnants of a pit that they would place them in there all day long. Barns, there's chicken coops, there were dairy barns, all kinds of structures that helped the farming operations. And then most of the far west and north part of campus was all fields and grazing area. So the students were responsible for maintaining all of that. Imagine how much work that was. You're only spending a couple hours in the classroom. You spend the rest of the time just trying to maintain those 320 acres. Mm. The only hospital in the Mount Pleasant area for a long time was the hospital right here on the boarding school property. So in addition to, you know, girls basically entertaining people, also if you stopped at the laundry poster over there, girls were washing the community's laundry as well. Girls were also nurses in the hospital, where they could be exposed to all kinds of communicable diseases, and then of course bring them back to their dormitories, where they'd expose all of their other friends and the people they lived with to those communicable diseases. This was a dining area. So for all those, you know, big to-do people in the community or around the state or from the federal government would come in, they would also have meals served here for them. So this was a great part to show the students off, because the students would be serving, the students would be cooking those meals, and they would show everything good about what's going on in the school, as opposed to some of the other atrocities that were happening behind that. Not to say that everybody didn't, you know, dislike the school. There are students out there that have talked to us and said, we loved coming to the school. We learned to trade, we learned how to speak English, we were fed three times a day. And then you have other people that seen the other side of it because they were disobeying some of those rules that were set forth by those administrators here. So you have two different sides to this, and then you also have the sides of the unspoken children that perished, you know, during this time here as well.
I don't think it was right. Because all those children, they left their homes and had to go there. Those kids, they were away from their mother and fathers. And it seemed like they could have stayed home, you know, with their own parents and grew up that way. But then there's some people you talk to, and they said that they liked it. Very few people, though.
Mm-hmm. And was your family in that group, in that category? They said that they liked that they got to go?
No.
No?
No. They would rather stayed home.
What did they say about that?
I never really asked them, but it was something they had to do, you know, because they was like ordered to do it.
Mm-hmm. So overall, they were pretty quiet about it. Yeah.
When I was there, at that ceremony, there was a lady that got up and she gave a speech. And the two things that stuck out in my mind is she said to keep our culture going and I think our education and our language. So that's what I'd like to see keep going.
Mm-hmm. As far as language, do you think that's possible? Or
I think so, yes. I do, because one day my grandson, he came home and he was talking about the classes he was taking next fall. And he said, Grandma, he said, I signed up for Potawatomi language. And I said, you what? He said, I signed up for Potawatomi language, and I about fell off the floor. So he's going to take that next year.
Wow.
in public school, so they're going to teach that.
Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm.
You said you almost fell to the floor out of shock, excitement. What was going through your head?
Excitement, you know. Oh, wow, that makes me feel good, you know, our own language being taught in a public school or any school.
Was it important to your mom for you to learn Potawatomi?
Not really, not at that time. It wasn't, because I asked her once about teaching me how to speak it, and she wasn't too interested in it, because I think that they always told them they couldn't speak their language.
Where?
At Mount Pleasant boarding school.
So that idea was still embedded in her mind.
Yeah.
Do you feel like the opportunity to learn that was stolen from you?
Probably, yes.
Native languages and dance and drumming, smoke from peace pipes and smudge cover that place now. Every year on the anniversary of the school's closing, the Saginaw Chippewa tribe invites the tribes of Michigan and the local community to honor the students forced to attend the school, heal from the trauma it's inflicted on our people, and remember the children who never left. Perhaps the most mind-numbing part of the day is the reading of the names of every child we know of who lost their life while at the Mount Pleasant School. In 41 years of operation, the school recorded 5 student deaths. Research coordinated between Central Michigan University and the tribe led to the discovery of 225 student deaths. We wore their names around our necks and danced around the drum in their places to say, we see you, we know your names, and you are not forgotten.
David Chiffinry Chippewa. Isaac Bird. Peter Adams.
Anna Jackson. Sarah Adams.
It makes you feel like, kind of like start hating some people, you know, for taking your children away like that. And maybe you would start drinking and you try to start figuring out a way you could get your kids back.
Joseph Chippewa.
And then you're fighting somebody that's a lot more powerful than you.
Yeah. It's kind of been the struggle the whole time, huh?
Yeah.
Do you wish that your mom would have told you more about it?
I do now. I do. But no, not like I said, they wouldn't. The kids weren't allowed to hear the stuff.
Yeah.
And they stayed in the house and talked Potawatomi in there.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think they were talking about it?
Because they knew that they weren't supposed to be talking about it.
Mm. And they still felt that fear in them that they couldn't?
Probably.
So that stayed with them.
Yeah.
Much of the school's indoctrination stuck with its students. One area in particular for the Pokagon Band was religion. Catholicism was embedded into the schooling, but our tribe was practicing Catholicism long before, since we avoided removal in the early 1800s. The chief at the time, Leopold Pokagon, if that tells you anything about his importance, walked to Detroit to find a minister to convert our tribe so the U.S. government would let us stay on our land. It worked.
I was brought up Catholic, and now you hear a lot about our native religion, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I had that pound in my head for so many years. But then I think maybe I should change. But then I say our native religion is like Catholic in a way, because they use the water and tobacco and fire in the Catholic religion, and they use it also in, what would I say, our natural religion like that. And I think, should I just forget being Catholic and just go straight native or what? And it's hard to decide.
Yeah.
Because I grew up all my life, and that's what we always knew.
Right. What are some of the thoughts that go through your mind as you are trying to decide which to go with?
I don't know. Like, being a Catholic, you know, they think to go to church on Sunday, you know,
mm-hmm.
like that. And like our religion, you know, you can go out to the sacred fire and go in there, and that's what I mean. I don't know, because it's hard for me to decide, and I want both.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you can have both?
Kind of, I think you can. In a way you can, but in a way you can't.
Yeah.
The tribe and tribal nations across the country can't go back, can't change what happened. And that's not our goal. The Pokagon Band got federal recognition in 1994. We've built up our business entities, regrouped as a people to learn or relearn culture and language. It's been decades of rebuilding. We're piling on brick after brick, stone after stone, youth to elders.
Now that basket up there, I made that basket.
Oh, which one?
Up there by that picture.
Oh, that one. Very pretty. Can I pick it up?
Sure. That's the first time I had ever made a basket like that. I mm-hmm. always thought I could never do it, but I did.
And how old were you when you made your basket?
This was only a few years ago out mm-hmm. to elders. I said, I'd never be able to make that, but I did.
Yeah. How'd that feel to be able to do that?
Seems like it hits you right here, you know. And you think, oh, this is what it was felt like when our ancestors were making baskets, and some of them would make baskets and they'd go and sell, help get some food in the house,
yeah,
like that. But it really did. It really made me think of all of our elders. Yeah, I was so happy that I could do that. And I never thought I would ever be able to make a basket. It looked like it was so hard. You know, like when I said she made that necklace for me.
Mm-hmm.
I did not. And she was thinking about our culture. And I always thought that was so odd why she made that necklace for me.
How do you understand that now?
That she was thinking of the way she was brought up, her Indian heritage.
So she never did anything like that before?
No, never. But it was toward the end when, you know, a couple years before she passed. I didn't think that it would bother me this like this, but to think of it, you know, to go back and think of it. Just going back there and being at that school, you know, I always think, oh, God, you know, Mom, here I am. I come to see you. You know, just,
yeah.
You know, you, like, it's crazy, but, it's like your mother can sense, you know what I mean, that you're there. Sense that you come up there to see her. I mean, she isn't there, but she can sense it. And you get this feeling like it's a good feeling, you know, somebody came back to see us.
Why that place, though? Why not another? Why does that place give you such a connection?
Oh, it's not just that place.
Mm.
I mean, she's buried out at Silver Creek.
Mm-hmm.
And I drop by there occasionally and see her, you know. I don't know, but I just go by back there and I says, oh, they're having the thing up there at Mount Pleasant. I got to go up there, you know. That's where my mom went to school. I gotta go see it.
The Mount Pleasant Indian Industrial Boarding School campus joined the National Register of Historic Places this year, but the buildings are falling into disrepair. The Saginaw Chippewa tribe is deciding how best to maintain the property in a way that won't let people forget what happened here, so that this history is never repeated. A thank you to the Saginaw Chippewa tribe for giving us access to their YouTube videos. You can watch the entire event for yourself on their YouTube channel. I'm Kyla, and I edited this episode. Paige Risser and myself produced it. Pokagon citizen Bobby Lynn composed and recorded our wonderful music. Join us again next month for another story from our tribe. Until then, Bama Pi, be with you again.